So, Mike, today you have a piece in Quartz about how Apple closed 0.1% lower, marking a losing streak of 8 consecutive days. And CNBC says this hasn't happened in 18 years. Meanwhile, Amazon crushed earnings expectations last week, and they seem unstoppable. Joining us to talk about this story, the story behind the earnings, is Alex Wilhelm, editor-in-chief at Mattermark. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be back.
Good to have you. So based on last week's news, a lot of people are comparing the two companies, but does it make sense to compare Apple's to Amazon's?
Well, I think you always want to be very careful. We're talking about the big five, roughly, you know, Alphabet, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook, and it's been a mixed bag. So I wouldn't want to say draw a direct comparison between, you know, Facebook or Amazon and Microsoft, Apple or Alphabet, but you can look at the broader collection of the largest platform-based tech companies and say, how are they doing in aggregate? And the answer is, you know, pretty good, nothing crazy, nothing terrible.
So, Mike, what do you think about Apple's big slide?
Well, I've written a few pieces recently about how I think Apple's in a weird phase right now, somewhere between boring and not entirely sure what its next big hit will be, and they do really need one. I don't think that this is like the death knell. I think Carl Icahn the other day was being a little too overdramatic by selling all of his shares, to be honest. I think that this was always just going to be a slow quarter. I think the iPhone 7 will almost certainly see them go back on track. And the big question remains for me is whether they have anything beyond that. You know, this thing is not great, but I keep wearing it. But, you know, like, they need something. They need that iPod device, that you know, slightly cheaper device that will fill stockings and, you know, will be handed out at graduations and things like that. And that, to me, is a really big question about their, you know, hardware future.
Well, Carl Icahn has never once overreacted to anything. So this is definitely a first moment in history which we can say that about the investor. But I think you're right. I mean, everyone wants a new iPod or iPad-level product from Apple, especially in an age when Mac sales are declining on a year-over-year basis. And I think the rough gist around the tables that I sit at is that no one knows what it is or if there is something coming. Apple is certainly not ahead in VR or AR. They're not ahead in automotive. And so it's very, very curious or it's kind of head-scratcher what they may put out to solve this problem. But it's very hard to knock Apple too much because they made like $10 billion last quarter. And so Amazon, yes, had a very solid quarter and beat expectations, but they had about $500 million in profit. So Apple was about 20x, 20 times as much. So yeah, we can sit here and kind of throw a little bit of shade at Tim Cook and so forth, but the scale of profit definitely still matters. And when you compare market caps, you know, you can understand why Apple's worth more than Amazon still.
So what do you think about that? I mean, you know, we're both wearing our Apple Watch, Mike, and, you know, you wear it, you don't really know why. You're not wearing yours.
I'm not. I don't own one.
But then, you know, there's also the Amazon Echo. You know, that is, everyone talks about how that's just a breakthrough device. I have that also. I love them both. So I don't know, looking at the devices, does that make sense to look at the company as a whole? Like, are we more excited about Amazon right now? Or is it really just, is this a failure, the watch? That's several questions. It's for either one of you.
Okay, well, I'll just one small thing. People say, you know, why are we making fun of the Apple Watch, which sold X million units, calling it a flop, and then the Amazon Echo, much fewer number of million units and calling it a success? It's because everyone thought the Apple Watch would do very well. No one thought the Echo would sell at all. And so the Echo actually is a breakout success for Amazon, which has had a history of actually hardware struggles recently with their Fire Phone. Whereas the Apple Watch comes off the back of the most successful new product lines in hardware history. And so that's why I think people are trying to draw lines that are more positive for Apple, when in reality, Amazon does have the hit.
Well,
I would echo those statements.
There we go. We got jokes today on the show, everyone. Watch out. Nerds on parade.
Well, okay. So when you say no one expected to see that from the Echo, I mean, was the Echo announced months before, like the Apple Watch? I mean, is it like reality versus expectations? I mean, the Echo kind of came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, it didn't have a multi-year free press cycle behind it to drive its, you know, first day sales. And also, no offense to Amazon, but Apple has more dedicated hardware customers. I mean, I don't recall people really waiting outside to buy Amazon Kindle products. Whereas for anything, Apple released a new cable, and people would camp outside here in SF to get a scratch at it. So I think Amazon's not only created a new product category, but done a really good job of linking hardware to its retail empire. And so they've actually improved their core experience while expanding their product lines. That's awesome. Apple wanted to do that with the Apple Watch and apps for the Apple Watch, but I don't think those have done that well. So it was a similar idea coming from the physical to the software, but Amazon, I think, in this case, definitely did a much better job. And that's why my friends brag about their their Echoes and their useful Alexa, but no one really shows off their Apple Watch.
I do.
Well, you know, you're special.
Okay. Oh, thanks. Okay, so let's move on from the big companies and move on to startups. Christopher Mims wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal today that said, this tech bubble is bursting. Alex, do you agree?
Yes and no. So I hear two different things. I talk to venture capitalists and entrepreneurs pretty much every day, and everyone goes, the world's ending, the world's ending. I go, cool, are you still investing? Yes. Or are you raising? Yes. Okay, so I have a hard time finding the entrepreneurs and venture capitalists that are really pulling back at the moment. There's certainly some shift in valuation and spend on the side of startups, but things mostly seem to be about where they were. I just published some numbers on, for example, the Indian and Southeast Asian VC markets for the Q1, and compared to Q4, they're about flat. And also North America was about flat compared to Q4. So I think there's a lot of hand-wringing, but not a lot of change in behavior, which could exacerbate later problems. But for now, things seem, okay.
What do you think, Mike?
I would agree that things are kind of going along as they have been, but I would argue that that's not necessarily a good thing. I wrote a thing today kind of using Silicon Valley, the most recent episode that aired last night on live TV, about there was just this really dark moment, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but basically, they have some new management and they're model for how to make money and how to go public and how to go forward is entirely based on knocking out revenue sooner rather than later, rather than building a viable product to, enrich the world. And, if you view that through the lens of one of the producers of the show, Dan Lyons' new book, Disrupted, about his time at HubSpot, one of these unicorns that no one is really quite sure what they actually do, unless you're like a big old nerd. That seems to be a model for a lot of startups, a lot of these unicorns, a lot of these companies that are going public probably before they have a foundation for stability. I mean, look at Twitter. They've never generated a yearly profit, and yet, they're still a publicly traded company. Is that smart? Is that a good way to run a business? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but it was funny to me to watch that show, which has just been about like, oh, look at all these silly nerds in Silicon Valley. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, actually this is probably going to affect the entire world like the dot-com bubble did.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. So first of all, Twitter's valuation managed to fall under the $10 billion mark recently, making it a non-decacorn, I guess. Is the current vernacular. Kill me if you want to. Also, your point about them not making a yearly profits is apt on a GAAP basis, because they spend about 39% of their aggregate revenue on share-based comp, which I care about a lot too, by the way. I'm with you there. But a lot of people would say that on a basis, they generate a lot of free cash flow. So there's kind of two sides of that coin. But the show last night was critical because it gave us one of the most immortal lines in technology ever, which was, is that a VCR? Why is there a logo on it? And if you haven't watched the episode yet, go watch it. You'll love that moment. It's fantastic.
So I'm not going so far back into the VCR days, but comparing the first dot-com bubble to what's happening now. I mean, does that make sense, or are they so different that they're incomparable?
I think they're incomparable. I think what we're seeing right now is the accretion of wealth has occurred on the private side, and therefore the accretion of risk is also on the private side. So if this all goes up in flames and goes down, people that lose money are the rich people, as opposed to last time around, a lot of people put their savings on the personal side, their 401ks, their IRAs, into this sort of thing, and had it all be deleted by market changes. And so there could be a very, very rapid and painful market shift. We could see the NASDAQ drop below 4K, that would turn everything off. But, on the private side, that is. But I think given that the money we're talking about is mostly institutional money, I'm less concerned about it. And given that none of it's my money, I don't really care. Let's burn.
Wow. Okay, so Mike, I want to get at something you said. You brought up the fact that people don't really know what these companies do. You know, there's something about the dot-com bubble. It's like, oh, it's pet food. It's, you know, a van that brings me my groceries. And, you know, even to some extent, there's Twitter. Like, I know what Twitter does. But then what about all these other companies that are the back end? Like, especially talking about, like, video. When we were at the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, like, there's, an entire, like, convention center filled with people working on the back end of video. Like, companies, you know, what are you doing? Like, we really don't – I mean, is that what you're talking about, too? Because, I mean, there's a lot of technology behind here, like, a lot of startups that really, like, the technology is beyond most people.
I would – entirely agree. Partly that is due to the fact that that's where you can make money now, as these are new opportunities. But I would also argue that, yeah, these are not as tangible objects. And this has been a massive issue for, like, the sharing economy. And it's, you know, are these people employees? You know, do you have a right to sell your home when, or your apartment when you're already, you know, leasing it from someone else and things like that? And what exactly does middle out compression mean? I mean, I know that's from Silicon Valley, but, like, there's probably companies doing that. I don't know what the heck that means. I don't know how that differs from top down, bottom up. I don't even know. But, like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we are in a lot of tech today. And that's kind of why I think we focus on things like, well, Apple's selling less or fewer iPhones, because I can understand what that means. And I can understand what hardware means. But, yeah, I mean, we're also just running out of, like, weird stuff to name stuff. So the weirder the name, the, like, weirder the product, it seems like.
I mean, we still have Bitcoin, so things are still pretty strange on the whole. It's, you know, it's a trustless cryptocurrency that's pseudo-anonymous. Of course, yes. Makes perfect sense. Spies them immediately. Come to Russia.